he took a reverse act and took the blade side and sliced her head twice on the top of her head.
You know what, gang? This show has been on the air for over a year now, and I cannot say enough about how many times there's been a guest on this show who comes on and says, look, I got into a defensive encounter and I talked to the police, or I didn't know what to do when all the dust settled. Firearms legal protection is there so you can win the fight after the fight and you're able to carry on with your life. It is the only defensive legal membership that Active Self Protection recommends, and there's a reason for that. They're committed to helping you train and educate yourself, and that's why they're invested in bringing these educational and training podcasts and videos to you. Please thank them for their support and consider them for your needs. Check their plans out at get-asp.com/FLP. get-asp.com/FLP. Well, all right, gang, welcome back to the Active Self-Protection Podcast. I am once again your host, Mike Wolliver, and I remain your favorite former Fed. With us today, a new friend of mine. His name is John. John lives in the Chicagoland area. If you've ever been to Chicago, you know that that could be anything within a 30-mile radius of downtown Chicago, basically. It's huge. It's a huge area. And the incident that happened to him happened in Wisconsin, and we'll get to that here shortly. And you know what I forgot to ask you, John, is what manner of work do you do, sir? What do you do for a living?
I'm a captain pilot on a corporate aircraft based out of the Chicagoland area, and I've been a pilot for going on almost 20 years.
Very cool. All right. So, you know, John and I talked briefly about a little bit of pilot stuff. I wasn't aware he was actually a pilot. And you are working with someone else on some sort of podcast deal. Real quick, just give that a plug, even if it's not out yet. Tell our listeners what it is you guys are doing over there and what it's about.
Sure. I'm working with the Pilot Network and a guy named Joe over there. And we're working on the medical side that you guys are actually going to hear about today. And then also, if you guys are interested, I also host my own podcast, Captain Johnny's Podcast, and I'm working through the journey of me becoming a captain right now. And I am in Arizona at this time and figuring out basically the next point of life and how to figure where I want to fly. I have everything set up, but it's still another new step. And this is all going on while I move myself from Chicago, basically, to continue on a lifelong dream. And a matter of fact, that podcast should be out hopefully by the time this one is aired. And I will be talking more about the details of the journey of how to become a pilot, how I work through points of my life where I struggled through certain lessons and how I continue to work through all the, as I call it, turbulence. And I know a lot of people don't like that term with airplanes, but it is. It's a change in your life that you don't expect. And I work through everything to make sure that my dream came true.
Very cool. So, you know, this is on topic, I guess. It's on the topic we're just talking about. Someone tried to explain to me turbulence recently in a way a dummy like me could understand it. And what this person told me, and this person's a pilot, not John, by the way, what this person told me basically is, you know, if you're driving through an area of windiness, you know, on the freeway, that area goes on for 10 minutes, you know, and then you're in a pocket where there's no wind really. And you sort of notice it. But when you're going 500 miles an hour at 30,000 feet, you go through these pockets of different, I guess, density air and air with different wind speeds, and you're going through them very quickly. And that's kind of why you feel that shaking. Is that pretty much accurate? Is that more or less?
It's the easiest way to describe it.
How would you describe it?
Yeah, it's the easiest way. Because, I mean, there's two different airflows. There's one that goes underneath the wing, and then there's one that goes above the wing, and that creates speed, drag. You know, there's four principles of flight. I could go on about this for a while, as sure. You know. But so when you're going through different air, as this pilot, you know, described, you may hit a different speed, a different change, different direction. And that all comes with typically weather fronts. So like a low pressure or high pressure have different characteristics to turbulence. So the easiest way is exactly what you said.
But okay. I'm glad I retained that well enough to repeat it at least.
You did. We're just trying to fly through the air at a very, very fast speed. And then we hit disruption.
So I got to put you in touch with John and another John friend of ours, who's out of Iowa, who's a pilot and a meteorologist. I think you guys would all just get together and geek out on pilot and weather stuff. But is not the point of this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we're here to talk about self-defense and self-defense related stories. And your story, you've given me kind of a rough breakdown of what happened, but it is, and I use this word advisedly, it is a harrowing tale. It sounds terrible and awful. And there was some serious injuries and there was some serious legal repercussions for the person who did it. And there was a lot of recovery, I assume, for you and the other person that was injured. So when all this happened, about how long ago was the incident in question?
It's approximately about 11 years ago.
Okay, so it's been a while. And so you've had time to look back and reflect on all this.
Completely. And it is something where I now think about it, and I was like, I can't believe this happened in my life. And when I tell people this, and like I just gave you a little blip of like a news article and got you, you know, the kind of the rundown of what happened. Mm-hmm. But people can't even fathom. They're like, there's no way you're, you know, the way you speak, the way you comprehend everything, the way you just act, you never know it.
Yeah. And we're foreshadowing a traumatic head injury, by the way, in case you're wondering at home.
It was a very, very traumatic injury. And we'll get into that in a little bit. I know that.
Absolutely.
And it's something that I still have to remind myself that it happened to me, because I just live every single day like it's, you know, my last, basically. And I've always had that even before this injury happened. And so now going through this and reflecting on it and looking into what I have done and changed in my life, there is things that do relate to this particular event for sure.
Absolutely. So let's not waste a whole lot of time here. The pleasantries have come to an end, folks. This is a chapter marker. I need to make sure I note this. Just kind of give us a rough overview. Where were you? What were you doing? And how are the two people, other people in this story sort of related? Kind of walk us through that.
Sure. So the two people that relate into this story is, one was my best friend, and she was previously dating the guy who created this whole entire traumatic event. Mm-hmm. And I had been working for a company down in Kansas City, and I had vacation time, and it's the first time in my life that where I've actually had worked with a company that had vacation time. So I was coming back to the Chicagoland area, and it was kind of interesting because I had been commenting to my boss. I was like, I don't take vacation. I don't know how to take vacation and everything. And the interesting note I should say now is that I actually haven't taken a real vacation since then. So we'll get, and some people may understand why not after, you know, we talk about this.
Sure.
Yet I decided, I was like, all right, you know, I'm like, if I'm forced to take a vacation, I got time off, I'm going to go hang out with friends and family in Chicagoland area. For the people who don't know, Janesville is about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes of O'Hare, and O'Hare is about a half an hour from the city of Chicago, the downtown area. So you're looking at about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes away from the actual downtown part of Chicago.
Yeah, see my earlier comment about the Chicagoland area being basically 12 states. It's huge.
Oh, it's very huge. I mean, we got 12 million people crammed into a 30 to 40 mile range, I mean, of this. And people can't believe how it's happening. The city alone is 2.8 million, just city proper.
Right.
So yeah, it's a very big area. So I decided that I was going to go on vacation. And again, I'm a big, for the listeners who don't know, I'm a big family oriented person and friends. I love hanging out with my friends. I didn't have money for a huge vacation. So I was like, what's better than going home, just mm-hmm. hanging out, you know, take the drive. I can afford the gas to go home and everything. I can do that. So let's drive home and go with it that way. And While this was happening, my friend just happened to break up about 4 weeks prior when I was planning this whole vacation. And then when this whole incident happened, and they'd been broken up for about 6 to 7 weeks. And we had the friendship, like where I told you before we started this, where when we dated someone, we kind of just let, you know, each other go each other's way, respected, you know, the relationship and everything. And then, you know, if we weren't dating, then we'd come back and talk a lot more. Mm-hmm. And it's, some people may not understand that, but when you actually do it, it shows a lot of respect to the people who are dating at the time, and that people don't realize that when it's happening.
Right.
And so I decided when we were talking that we're like, all right, I got the weekend available. Let's hang out. And so then she just happened to move into her own place about a week and a half prior. And she's like, okay, very good. She's like, let's hang out on Saturday. Like, you know, like I said, I'm like, all right. And I was driving up there on Saturday. And this was April 13th, by the way, which I always note this date because everybody's like, are you sure that wasn't Friday the 13th? And I'm like, it felt like Friday the 13th.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, as we get more into the story and you guys listen to this, you guys will understand exactly why you're like, holy cow, that was Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was one of my own horror stories. And so I was doing this drive up to Wisconsin, and after this fact now, and it's good to be able to give these details now, is the fact that my mom had this bad feeling and didn't tell me. And I was like, why didn't you tell me? You know, like, well, going throughout my life and me becoming a pilot and everything like that, she even had her own concerns and everything. She kind of held back from it a little bit. And then the same thing happened when I was going to go into the military, is that she just had a bad feeling. And 3 months later, 9/11 happened. So I was like, holy cow.
Yeah, but if your mom had called you on your way to Wisconsin to see your, frankly, on again, off again, good friend / love interest, would you have been like, you know what, mom, you had a bad feeling. I'm not going to go anymore. I'm just going to go home and watch MASH reruns all night long. Or would you have gone anyway?
You know, honestly, I probably would have went because I'm not a fearful person. Right. And that's part of the reason why I believe I am a pilot, because I'm not really that fearful about a lot of things. A lot of things don't scare me. But it still would have been one of those thoughts where I would have reconsidered a couple of things and be like, she doesn't normally say that. Like, what's the difference now? Mm-hmm. Like, why is she saying this? I think more stuff would have been playing through my head. You know, it's like the whole thing when someone tells you, hey, have a good day, I love you, everything else. And then, you know, you think about that, and sometimes it's routine and sometimes it's not. And when it's not routine, you're like, okay, what did they mean by this?
Right. You know,
like what was really going on here? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and you're thinking here like, okay, I'm like, this is weird. Or someone said, don't forget all this stuff that you got to do today and everything. So that stuff's always on your mind all day long until all that stuff is done, you know? And so like during the drive, like I had no clue on any of this type of stuff. And again, this is all the after fact. And I just happened to pull into Janesville and pull up to her apartment. And this is actually the first time that we have probably be easiest way to say is a scuffle, because he just happened to drive by her apartment, because Janesville is wide in area but small in population. It's about 30,000 people.
Okay.
And it's spread out among a big amount of area, and it's growing, but it's still small. And he just happened to be driving right by at the same time I pulled up. She also happened to be outside. My friend happened to be out. And then this is the boyfriend, I should say, too, for people who didn't notice it. But the boyfriend, ex-boyfriend,
right,
happened to be driving by. And I played the high road, and I just walked away. I didn't get involved with the talking, anything like that. She yells at him back and forth. And, of course, they start getting into a argument, you know, heated argument. And I was like, I'm not getting involved with this. This is not between me. I'm like, he's going to try to start something with me, but I am definitely going to try to play the high road here.
Now, at that moment, are you concerned that he's going to become violent? Did he give you any indication that he was going to be a violent actor in this whole thing?
No, I mean, because I did watch the argument from inside the apartment and everything, but I just didn't want to. I'm like, I know it's safer for me not to get involved in this situation. If there was a concern or anything like that, I mean, I did have my phone right near me. And, you know, I was hopeful that, like, now that I think about this now, that I didn't have to call the cops type thing. Unfortunately, this is part of the thing that I've noticed throughout my life and everything with a lot of relationships is that it, even though you're broken up and you're still at the end, you can still have those feelings near the end.
Sure. And
so there is jealousy coming out of him.
I got you.
He didn't know who I was, you know, because again, we didn't really talk about each other, you know, like, you know, whenever, again, like I said, it goes back to the whole thing. We respected each other and let each other date and everything. And then we went kind of our own ways and connected here and there just to see how each other were doing every once in a while.
So were you aware, as this argument's going on, are you aware this is the ex and the most recent ex? Like, this is a fresh wound for this guy. Is this all something you're aware of, or did you find that out when he showed up?
Oh, no. I knew about this previously. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So, I mean, we'd been talking for a couple months leading into this. So
I got you.
But we were doing it occasionally here and there. So she was telling me that she was moving out. And then once she moved out, the communication did increase.
And did they have any kids in common or any other ties besides having been together for this period of time?
I mean, they were together for approximately about 5 years, 6 years. And then they had two together.
Okay.
Two kids together.
That does definitely change the equation a little bit, at least.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys are, I assume he leaves at some point and ends up coming back. So kind of walk us through how that went down. It was the same day, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It was the same evening. So, I mean, I arrive approximately about 6:30, 7 o'clock to kind of give everybody an idea of what happens. And remember all these times even better now, because after he left, he kept texting her. And at one point I told her, I'm like, stop replying. I'm like, just leave the guy alone. Let him, you know, let him brew in his own jealousy, I guess, you know, whatever he's going to go through right now. I'm like, this is nothing that concerns him.
And nothing's going to get accomplished probably when he's in that state of mind anyway. So that's probably good advice.
Oh, correct. Yeah. Yes.
So did she listen to your advice and stop texting him?
She did, actually.
Okay.
So that was a very nice thing. And it goes into later things, actually, into the trial that actually helped out in our favor a little bit. But this, again, is now all the stuff that we know.
Right.
And so a couple hours go by in this whole time, and about an hour in, basically, she stopped replying. And then it started to become nightfall, and this was around April. And so she decided that she's like, you know what? She's like, I'm going to go have a smoke break, basically go out on the front porch and smoke. And then we were going to watch a movie. And everything. And then while she was out on the front porch, this is when everything happened.
Okay.
And this is where we now know a lot more information, but when we were in it, we had no clue how much he had been actually stalking the place, and he'd been basically setting camp up across the street, and we had no clue because it was turning into nightfall and you couldn't see him.
How long do we think that had been going on prior to this event?
Probably about a good hour and a half.
It had happened other days, do we think, or just this was the first time?
You know, that one he will never admit to, but the police tried to get more information to establish a pattern history to help the trial and everything.
Okay.
You being someone who has been through this and everything, understand exactly why you would ask those type of questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, pattern in practice beforehand does make a difference. I mean, and it's admissible information in court. If he'd been setting up across her house every day for 2 months or something like that, and we could, you know, you can prove that goes towards, frankly, in my mind, premeditation. Like the first guy that shows up here, one could infer to the jury at least first guy that shows up here that might even remotely be doing something other than selling her frozen steaks out of his pickup truck, I'm going to go make a scene and I'm going to beat him up or hit him over the head with a stick or whatever. So yeah, it's definitely relevant information. So at some point you're relaxing inside. I assume it didn't occur to you this guy was going to come over and do anything crazy. So she's out front having a smoke, no big deal. And then kind of walk us through what happens and what you heard from inside.
Yeah. So, well, we now know, like I said, he happened to, and to kind of give everybody an idea, is that she was on one of those old, like, Victorian houses where she had the upper apartment and then there was a lower apartment and like a basement apartment as well. And so three apartments in the whole entire unit. And she had the upstairs one. And then, of course, they have a porch connecting the upstairs down to, you know, the entrance and everything. And then it also separates the main apartment from the upper. And as she's having a smoke, what she didn't know is that he happened to pull into the driveway. And this goes back to where he was stalking from across the street. Mm-hmm. As he pulled his vehicle into the driveway behind the apartment building where all the parking spots were. And he was just waiting for someone to come out, basically, the whole entire time. And he had,
by the way, another legal point, laying in wait is an element of a crime in a lot of places. So that's relevant.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And he had bought the weapon, and it was a roofer's axe, and he had had it with him the whole entire time in the vehicle. When the kids were actually getting transported to the babysitter, because she didn't at this time have a vehicle, and he took them over to a babysitter so that she could have the weekend to herself and everything. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know, again, I was coming over, but he had this roofer's axe actually in his vehicle at the time too. So this now goes back to the whole, you know, premeditated type, you know, setup and everything.
So before we continue, I mean, obviously we're going to finish the story. Before we continue, do we now think perhaps his plan was to go there and just kill her and call it a night? Or do we know? Has he said anything, or has there any been any?
You know, difference? Now that we know all this information, honestly, who knows?
Okay. He's sitting across the street and then hanging out in the back of the house with a weapon we now know was purchased for the sole purpose of maiming or killing somebody. I think it's reasonable to infer, you know, we're not in a court of law anymore, so we can infer whatever we want, frankly.
Yes, but, that is true.
None of this is good. So you're upstairs. What gives you, or what alerts you to the fact that there's problems or issues outside, downstairs?
She starts yelling.
And what's she yelling exactly?
She starts yelling. And what happened is that he was sitting on the side of the house and just like looking around the corner on the, you know, from around to look on the porch, and she hears us rustling in the bushes, and she's like, it's got to be him. Mm-hmm. She's like, he's got to be doing something stupid or something like that.
That sounds too, like, big to be a raccoon. Okay.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. She's like, that's not a raccoon and everything like that. That sounds like a person. And so she starts yelling, and I'm looking out the window, and of course it's night. I can't see anything.
I asked already, was she yelling anything like help or just screaming noises, or what was coming out of her mouth?
It, you know, honestly, I don't know the exact words, but it was, I know one of them was like, what the hell are you doing here? And I don't know if all those words ever came out.
Right.
You know, everything is now, we're now going into like this super fast mode where people, you know, try to piece everything together. Mm-hmm. And I'm amazed that honestly, I can remember as much as I can. And thankfully, the police reports now have helped me piece in a lot of the things that I thought I knew, but I didn't know all the details to it.
Sure.
Which is nice now, because otherwise it's like that whole telephone game where, like, by the time it gets to someone else, like 10 times over, the information's all messed up.
Right.
You know, and so you try to do it the best you can. And I remember just hearing a lot of yelling and saying, what the hell are you doing here? And if one of the times I know that she did say his name, and that alerted me, like, right away.
So you knew that he knew his name and knew that meant we're talking about the same guy who we already know is not quite right lately.
Yeah, I knew something wasn't quite right. And typically, you know, I mean, we'd had that type of friendship where we, you know, you could tell a difference in the tone of voice too, type thing. Like this is something serious. Mm-hmm. And so at this moment, like, I keep hearing this and I'm like, I'm trying to look around and everything. I'm like, okay, this is not doing any good. I'm like, and this is not a moment where I'm going to just go hide. I'm like, right. This is a time where I now have to figure out what the hell's going on. So I go to the door, and as I go to the door, he's already running up the stairs. And I now know this, that there was 19 stairs that he's running up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, what is he doing? You know, and it's this moment where I'm like, okay, I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to stop him from getting in here. And that's if I close this door, I'm like, he's clearly coming after me.
Okay. You know, like, so that was your sense. He's coming after John, not her, or he's going to get to her to get to you. Okay.
Correct. Now he did actually attack her. Like, and this is further details that we know now. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that at the time.
Right.
That he had done that. But he did that because he knew that the only way he was going to, you know, get to me was to get through her, was to basically injure her and then come straight up for me.
So where were you as he's assaulting her? Were you able to see it? Did you know what had happened by the time he got to you, or you just know?
No.
Okay. No, so describe for the audience exactly what he did, because it's important as far as I'm concerned to relate to how the story goes.
Yeah. So the attack that happened on the porch is they had the scuffle. Like I said, I don't remember all the exact words because couldn't hear it all. And he took a Ruver's Act and took the blade side of the Ruver's Act and sliced her head twice on the top of her head.
Now, in retrospect, we know she made it through all of this. Was her skull fractured in that attack, or was it mainly superficial? Yes.
No, so, it was fractured.
So that's attempted murder. I don't care who you are or where you are or what jurisdiction you're in. So that's attempted murder. By the time he gets to you, and we'll go through all that process here in a second. Are you aware that she's gravely injured at the time that you're attacked, or you just don't know her dispo right at that moment?
No, I still heard some yelling that she was saying, like, "What the hell are you doing? Why are you going up there?" You know, the common things like, you know,
what you'd expect to hear. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, what you expect to hear. And at one point I do remember it got silent when he was about halfway up the stairs. And I'm like, oh, what the hell just happened down there? Like, why is she silent?
Right. But you didn't necessarily hear or see anything directly that would lead you to believe he tried to kill her.
No. Okay. There was no sight picture to kind of give the viewers. There was no sight picture because the stairs went straight down and then turned and went to another landing. Basically, there was a small mini porch area, like I said earlier. And so she was on the part where you couldn't see from straight down the stairs.
And not to nitpick this to death, but it's at this point, were you concerned violence was imminent, or did it just seem like they were arguing? Were you thinking about going down there and putting yourself in the middle of this, or were you like, they're just arguing, I'm just going to make things worse if I go down there? What's going through your mind as she's dealing with him downstairs?
Yeah, at first I thought it was just an argument.
Right.
I had no clue. When I saw him, then that's why I opened up the door to see what the hell's going on. And I was going to walk down the stairs, or at least start working my way down there and see if there's something I could do to help. And then maybe I'm like, do I have to call the cops? What do I have to do here? And when I saw him running after me, I'm like, oh no, he's coming after me. Mm-hmm. That's what the argument's about. I'm like,
describe
he's
that.
Not happy.
Clearly not happy. So describe for us, where do you encounter him? Kind of give the audience an idea, a mental picture. So are you walking down the stairs? Does he come upstairs? How does that work? And what's the first thing you see?
Yeah. So I knew as I opened up the door, so I'm running up the stairs, that one, I'm going into survival mode. Like, you know this, you're like, okay, something's going to happen here. I knew my best defense here was to try to close that door, lock the door, and give myself some ground. Even if he's going to bust it open, anything, at least it gives me some time to react and get myself prepared for what's going to happen.
Okay. And are there any weapons, firearms, anything like that, that you in the home that you could have possibly availed yourself of, or you didn't know, or what was the status on that?
No.
Okay.
No, that's a, and I don't have any myself due to the fact that I never thought I'd be in this situation.
Sure. Yeah, we're not blaming the victim here. That's for sure. You didn't anticipate. Oh, I know. Fighting a would-be axe murderer was not on your agenda. You looked in your Google Calendar, and nowhere was there anything referencing a potential axe murder that day. So, yeah, I understand you didn't see it coming. But again, we go through this minutia for a reason. The same way John and I break down these badge cams, and I think people think we're being super critical of the officer. Now, sometimes we are, and when we are, we're very clear that the officer did a poor job or whatever. And the idea is to help the next person, the next officer in that case, or in this case, the next potential self-defender, to pay attention to. My mom said she had a bad feeling. I wonder what's that about. And even if you don't act on it, file that away. Okay. My mom's got intuition. I should be a little bit more on my toes. And then this guy shows up. Okay. Well, that's weird. They've broken up. Why is he here? Why are they yelling? By the time it gets to I'm being chased up the stairs and I hope to God I can get a door closed. I mean, your options are pretty limited. So is there a door at the bottom of the stairs and the top, or the top lead to a landing and then a bedroom door? Or how was that set up?
Yeah. So to lay out the apartment is that it was a door at the bottom and you never really closed that door because there was a deadbolt on the top and everything. Mm-hmm. You could lock bolt if you wanted to, but she had had that bottom door open, of course, because she's out smoking. So there was no point of having that happen. And a matter of fact, I mean, the top door was unlocked as well, because I mean, this is Janesville, Wisconsin. Like, and there is stuff that happens there now that I know more, but I mean, it's still Midwest. You know, the Midwest, like so many people leave their, you know, so much unlocked. And I know this coming from Chicago. People are like, are you kidding me? Have you seen the news lately?
Yeah, but in the Midwest, people will kill you with kindness. right? Yeah, there's a thing, for those who don't know, there's a thing called Midwest Nice. And it's almost too nice. That's kind of a running joke. Neil, who people will know from the Extra Channel and some of the main channel videos, Neil Widener, will send me these videos of some comedian. I don't know if it's TikTok or Instagram Reels or whatever, but it's just him sort of making fun of how nice people from the Midwest are. I think he's from Wisconsin as well. So anyway,
yeah, enough said. It's a common thing from the Midwest that people, you know, it's a good stereotype, but sometimes it makes you too comfortable.
Right.
So
okay.
There's times with that. But so the apartment, like I was saying, is laid out to where that top door goes straight into a living room, family room.
Okay.
And then there is bedrooms behind there.
Okay.
But because she just happened to move in a couple of weeks ago and she didn't have her bedroom set up or anything like that, she was actually had a bed set up in the living room. And then her kids were in the other rooms behind that area where the kitchen was and everything else in the bathroom. And so her bed was actually set up and like she made it into a makeshift bedroom at the time.
And there's no one else. There's no one else in the apartment at this point. The kid, you said our bad guy dropped the kids off somewhere else.
They were at the babysitter for an overnight and having a lot of fun.
Okay. So it's just you and our would-be axe murderer. And now you're running up the stairs. Kind of walk us through what happens next.
Yeah, so he's running up the stairs, and this is the point, like I told you, that I have to close this door. I have to gain some ground. I have to figure out a game plan. Well, as I close the door, I mean, I thought it was closing it fast enough, but it just sped him up that much more, and he was able to get a little bit of his toe, or shoe, I should say, part of the, you know, in the door, and I wasn't able to close it fully.
Do we know now, was there a toxicology report? Was this guy high in anything, drunk, anything like that?
He was on illegal steroids, and so he had some stuff in him.
Right.
But, and the alcohol level wasn't high enough to test, basically. So he could have had maybe a beer, but that's nothing high enough to test.
Right. So before we continue, describe this guy generally for people. Is he a big guy? Is he intimidating? Is he muscular? Is he fat, skinny? What?
Yeah, I mean, he was 5'11", 225 pounds, and he took illegal steroids.
Okay.
So, I mean, that kind of, he goes to the gym every single day. He's the one who's at that, you know, for the people who used to go to Gold's Gym, he's the one slamming down the weights all the time. You know, he's that type of guy. You know, he would definitely not be accepted at like Planet Fitness and everything.
The lunk alarm would go off with some frequency.
Yeah, the lunk alarm would definitely go off. And I mean, this time I'm still 5'8", I should say, but I mean, I'm sitting about maybe 165, 170 pounds and not scrawny by any means, but compared to him, he definitely has a little bit of an advantage on me.
Okay, I gotcha. All right, so he doesn't, you can't quite get the door closed. Not your fault. You did your best. What happens next?
So at that point, I realized I'm like, I got to keep backing up and get some ground on him so I can see what I'm dealing with in this situation. Mm-hmm. Like the whole entire time, and you know this, I mean, you've analyzed a lot of things and been through a lot of stuff, you know, and seen a lot of stuff that, like, the more time you have to react to something, to think about something, the more you can do to minimize the situation.
Sure.
And
yeah, John likes to say time buys you options. Yes.
Yeah. Completely buys you options. Well, I end up backing up into the bed basically because the bed was in the living room and he keeps coming at me. And so then I keep doing this dance where I keep moving myself around the room and trying to figure out, I'm like, what the hell are we doing? And he keeps yelling at me. He's like, what the hell are you doing here? Blah, blah. You know, he's going on this whole entire rant while this is all happening. Mm-hmm. While we start getting into a fist fight. And this is where, like, he keeps saying words at me and he's not liking that I am fighting back on everything, that I'm not going to just go down with a punch or anything like that. And to give the listeners an idea, I'm the last child. And so of five. And so I've been like, I'm not saying I'm the runt of the litter, but I definitely know how to fight. I've been fighting for my whole entire life for everything. You're,
like me, your entire childhood was gladiator school. My brothers would set would set up a boxing ring, and my biological mother's boyfriend, great guy, we loved to tears, bought us all boxing gloves. And I'm the youngest of four. And their idea of setting up a boxing ring was to set up a square in the backyard where I would stand in the middle with my hands to my side and they would sprint from the corner and punch me in the face on their way by. So yeah, I totally understand what you mean by being the youngest does prepare you in some way for potential mortal combat down the road. So yeah. So continue. He's now fist fighting with you. Are you aware of the presence of this weapon at this point or not yet?
I am not. He actually has this behind his back and I'm still not even sure. He may even been able to put it like in, you know, in the bottom part of like his belt loop or something, or like his pants or something like that one. I don't fully remember because this time, I mean, go back to what we were talking about earlier. We're getting ready to watch a movie. It's half dark in here. Like we have bare minimum lights in there and everything, which actually didn't help to my advantage because I had no idea what the hell's going on here because I'm just seeing shadows and images and everything like that. I'm like, we got some light, but not compared to like full light. So I had no idea that he had this. And this is where, you know, it's probably a good 2 to 3 minutes. I mean, it's hard to estimate a time on this, but he was not happy that again, I'm continuing to fight to survive, you know, to, you know, live basically. And he decides, he's like, that's it. I've had enough with you. And he's like, it's time to take you out. And I'm like, say what?
He said those words?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's like, I've had enough with you. I'm done with this fight. I'm here to take you out. You know, like, this is it. I'm done. You know, he's like, you're not supposed to be here. I'm like, wow.
That's
how I remember these too.
That sounds like he was there to kill her and you were just happened to be in the way. You just happened to be there. I mean, that would be my thought process.
It's either me or her. That one, I don't know. Like, right. And he'll never admit that either because, you know, he never even admitted it in a trial and everything. But at that point, I'm like, what the hell is he going to do? And I start to back up a little bit. And that is when I actually saw the weapon. And I only saw the weapon at that moment because of the shadow of it going around. And I still didn't even fully understand when he just swung at me. I'm like, what did he just swing at me? I'm like, it's not a gun, obviously, because I'm like, we're too close range for this. I'm like, so it's some type of, like you said, Mortal Kombat type weapon. I'm like, what am I dealing with here? And I was able to maneuver away from the first time he tried to hit me and do one of those, you know, the Matrix type maneuvers like Neil does, right, and swing away. But as natural reaction, I swung back, of course, to a similar position, and he had already was ready to swing and hit me again.
Okay.
And so then the second time he hits me and takes, and I now know this now, and takes the blunt side of that axe and takes it to the straight side of my head. And I was, and literally in a daze, I'm like, what the hell just happened? And it's like going to a boxing match, you know, you're just like, boom, out of the middle of nowhere, the guy pulls some random move on you that you weren't expecting on the fight. And you're like, whoa, what?
So I assume he hit you more than once. Were you aware of the follow-up blows, or did you pass out at some point, or what happened?
So the second swing, he hit me and it jarred me a little bit. And so then I was like, okay, what the hell's going on here and everything.
Sure.
And then I started to fall a little bit in pain to my knees. And then the third hit and everything, I was basically ended up on the ground because I had no idea what the hell was going on. Mm-hmm. I also knew at this point, I'm like, honestly, my only instinct and only reaction that I can do with this guy is to be able to get into the fetal position and try to kick his legs out or do something to get him at my level or on the same level so we can actually have a, you know, actual fight here. Again, not knowing that he just took a brutal axe to the side of my head.
So I want
to
stop you right
there. Thinking.
I think that's important. God forbid any of our listeners or viewers get into a situation where things have gone this far, but there's countless reports of people, cops, you know, regular civilians, non-cops, whatever, getting shot, getting stabbed, and not being aware of it right away because your adrenaline's going and you're in this fight or flight and you're focusing on what you're doing so much that you can be shot with a 9mm or a 45 or stabbed, potentially fatally stabbed, and not know it yet. Well, now we can add being hit over the head extremely violently with the blunt out of an axe to the list of things that you don't, your brain isn't really processing it. Your brain is not able to process small details of stuff. It just knows problem, I want to live, you know, I'm going to make the body do whatever I can to sustain life. And that doesn't include differentiating between a fist and a potentially a fist and an axe. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I almost hope at some point you lost consciousness, but did you?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And pretend like you don't know anything else, right? You did. You haven't been alive the ensuing 11 years and haven't read police reports. At some point you wake up from that.
Correct.
Where are you and what are you looking at? You open your eyes. Do you remember the first thing you saw?
Yeah. I woke up and I could see probably, I would say about 30%, maybe 40% of my eyes. I was pretty bloodshot at that time.
Okay.
And to kind of help the listeners through this is that, after I woke up, he wasn't there. I don't know why he left. I don't know what spooked him. I don't really care at this moment.
He might have just thought the job was done too. You know, he killed
you. He could have also. And honestly, I'm glad he did because at the same point, I'm sitting here. I'm like, I may have a chance of survival now that he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I wake up, I hear noises of my friend walking up the stairs from the porch and everything.
The same friend who just been assaulted.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's correct. Yeah. Same one that has been assaulted, and she was walking up the stairs, yelling up the stairs. I didn't hear her until I gained consciousness. And then when she also got closer in, and she started yelling and asking if I was okay. And I'm like, I'm okay. Are you okay? I still haven't fully grasped exactly what's happened. I know I've been injured. I know I've been hurt. I didn't know the severity of the injury at this mm-hmm. time. I just knew I couldn't see all the way. What I did know is that I had blood all over me, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, I need to get something on my head and protect my head, because I'm like, that's gotta be where the blood's coming from. Mm-hmm. I'm like, especially since I knew I did know he did hit me two times that I remember in the head.
Okay, you know, so at some point you assess, okay, I've been hit in the head. Do you reach up and feel that mushy place? I have dealt with people that have been hit in the head with things very much like you're describing. And for them, they felt, you know, their head hurt. Obviously, they were in pain. They saw blood. But it wasn't until they reached up and actually touched a part that's supposed to be hard, and it wasn't anymore exactly, that they realized how bad it was. Was that similar to your situation or no?
Similar, but I didn't even actually have to check that, because as I was coming to, like I said, my friend was coming up the stairs and she happened to see it. And so then she yells at me. She's like, you're bleeding from your head. Mm-hmm. And it confirms exactly what I thought. And so I'm like, okay, I don't even want to touch it. I want to do anything. I don't want to affect it. Like, I'm like, I know we have to protect it. And then I yell at her to get me a towel so we can put a press on it, basically. And then I was like, and I'm like, I'm sitting here, I'm like, we got to call 911. Like, I'm like, the only chance I have for survival here, she has survival here, and to catch this guy is we got to call and ask for help. And she ran to the bathroom, got a towel, and I should say she ran as quickly as she could, you know, in her right. state as well. But I mean, she ran, she got a towel and then put it on top of my head and everything. And then I took my hand at that point and pressed it on top of my head to put pressure on it and everything. And then she called 911. And this was about a little after 10 o'clock when the 911 call happened. And like I said, I happened to show up about 6:30, 7 o'clock. And so this was about 3 hours later that this whole thing happened.
And at what point are you aware that she is similarly injured?
I couldn't fully tell because I had the pretty bloodshot eyes. But I could tell that she was in pain and I could see blood. And I did ask her, I'm like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, I'm sitting here like, there's no way.
Right.
I'm thinking in your head, I'm like, if I'm barely alive, I'm like, there's got to be something else. But I didn't know that she had been attacked still.
Right.
And I couldn't see it all either. So I had no idea. I saw blood on her hands, but I thought that was from me.
I think the teaching point here for the listeners and the viewers is this. After an attack like this, you're frequently not going to have all the information. You're going to be in a state of potentially shock, like literal shock. And, you know, getting yourself to medical assistance as quickly as possible can't be overstated. Now, an injury to the head, anyone who's been around, you know, law enforcement or even like martial arts or whatever, if you get cut above the brow line, generally speaking, the level of blood coming out looks like you're about to die of a cranial hemorrhage, even if it's literally just a cut, just a skin deep cut over the, you know, over the brow. So if you see someone bleeding from the head profusely, it could be that they have a relatively minor cut that just needs pressure, or maybe they got hit in the head with a sharp end of an axe. And it isn't until you inspect closer that you determine which it is. And in your state, you weren't in the state to really give anyone any particular medical assistance at that point. You're the one needing it as well. How long That's does correct, it take yeah. for help to get there? And is the first help the police or EMS?
The first help was police because, of course, she calls in and say, hey, I've just been attacked and my best friend has just been attacked. And so the first, you know, question 911 operator has is like,
where is he?
You know, where is he? Are you okay? Like, it's a thought process. Like, we want to, where is he? Is he still around? And she says, I don't know, which we didn't.
That's why the police have to get there first. I mean, the EMS, if they have hatchet wounds in their heads, they're not good to anybody. So you got to make sure the scene is secure. That's something a lot of people don't realize. And this goes into something I've wanted to talk about for a while. So it could be a perfect opportunity. This could be a long show. So everybody get comfortable. I can't say enough how important it is when you're on the phone with a 911 dispatcher to understand that it may seem to you, and look, and there are bad dispatchers who are terrible at their job. Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about an average good dispatcher, good at his or her job, is as you're saying things into their ear, it's almost like they're on autopilot to where they're hearing it and they're typing it into a computer. That computer is then being read by another dispatcher who's conferring that information, giving that information to the officers or deputies in the field. So just, it may seem like, you know, they're yelling at you to calm down, right? I don't want to be yelled at to calm down. I just got assaulted. Don't yell at me to calm down. You need to understand that their job is to get the most important information out of someone who's not in a good position to give information, right? Usually just been in a car accident or just been robbed or just been hit over the head with a hatchet. So they have to be very specific. It's almost like emergency communication on their part to get information out of you. So if the police or the fire rescue don't come running through the door immediately as fast as you'd obviously like them to, because you're worried you're going to die, understand that there's certain things they absolutely have to do. They're not going to let fire rescue walk in the doors until they are 100% sure it is safe for them to do so. So post-assault, it's almost always going to be law enforcement first. And unfortunately, people have died waiting, you know, for a scene to get secure. That's a real thing that can happen. So if you're on the phone with 911, you know, be as concise as you can, give as much information as you can, but understand that, you know, they can't miraculously materialize in your living room 2 seconds after you call. It's going to take time. So hang in there if you find yourself in this position. Police show up. Are you two both still upstairs when the police arrive?
That's correct.
And they just walk upstairs or do you have to go down to them, or how did that work?
No, they actually asked my friend if she was able to walk downstairs and so that they could at least get her out and get one person to safety. And I know exactly where their thought was, and she was able to do that. I'm not moving. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I knew better. I'm like, they're coming to me. I'm like, because I'm like, if anything, you know, happens while I'm moving, I'm like, you're talking about life or death here.
Sure.
You know, I'm like, I want someone who knows more than me, you know, to take care of me.
There's a reason that they say it's not brain surgery to describe something that's not very complicated, because brain surgery is never not extremely complicated. And I think that was super duper, I hate to say heads up, it's a bad pun, but it's just amazing that you were able to think to yourself, you know what, whatever else happens, I think not moving is my best bet right now, because you don't know the condition of what's going on, you know, in the back of your head, the top of your head. So I think sitting tight was the move at that point. Although I'm sure you weren't sure anything was the move at that point, because you're worried about dying.
So, you know, it's interesting that you always think about this, because when you're actually in the moment, I'm thinking I just got to survive however possible, but there was just a gut feeling, and it's like you just said, like, just go with what you're feeling and what your gut's trying to tell you, because if I moved, that actually probably could have been worse,
right,
in that situation, for sure.
I'm sure there was a Neanderthal who just got his head chomped mildly, a mild chomping by a saber-toothed tiger. He didn't know anything about brain surgery, but that guy knew, Og is going to sit here until someone comes to get me, because I don't know what's happening up here. So well done you for recognizing that. So eventually the police come to you. Do they come up sort of tactically, like they're not sure, guns out, that sort of thing, to protect themselves and others? Okay, walk us through that.
They did. They did have their assault rifles with them. I mean, they were tacked and ready to go with it. They were yelling up the stairs, and they kept asking me to tell them where I was, what was going on as they're coming up the stairs. as they're making their entrance so they can kind of figure out what's going on. And I told him, I'm to the left of the door and I'm on the floor and I'm injured. I just kept saying that. And then they kept yelling and like, is there anybody else in here? I'm like, not that I know of.
Good answer.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. I'm like, I have no clue. The first two officers entered in and they look at me and they're like, are you okay? And I'm like, I literally says as good as I could be.
You remember the line?
Like, okay.
You remember the line in Pulp Fiction where that guy goes through that terrible situation in the basement and Bruce Willis is like, hey man, are you okay? He says, I'm pretty far from okay. I'm leaving out a bad word. I'm pretty far from okay. Are you okay? No, I'm not okay. So how long does it take them to go, okay, well, bad guy's gone. Well, let's get EMS up here. Was it relatively quick, I hope?
Oh, yeah, it was relatively quick. As they got up there, like I said, they asked me again, and they're like, after they said, are you okay? And I said that same line like we just, you know, just said. And they said, I'm as good as I could be. And I said, I'm like, I don't know where he is. Please find him. I remember those words directly. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay. And so they started working to secure the area. And they noticed that the living room was secure, so they kept working their way all the way to the back and everything. And at that time, as they were working their way to the back, they call for additional officers in there. And the third and fourth guy come up and everything. And the third guy saw me and instantly knew, because he had served in Iraq, the type of injuries with head injuries and how much time we had left and everything. He literally handed his assault rifle all to the officer behind him and did a baseball slide to me because he's like, I got to help this guy out.
Right.
I don't know how much time he has.
So was that officer by any chance, was he soldier, Marine, whatever, was he a medical, like a corpsman or something? Or was he just, knew
what he was
looking at?
No, he was just a soldier, and his best friend was the medic, actually. But he'd just seen enough of those injuries, and he's had to help other people and help his friend, who was the medic, you know, with, you know, helping people from injuries, you know, from overseas in Iraq.
I'm going to do something I've never done before, John, and I know this is going to upset some people, but we're at about an hour right now. And the rest of the story is probably, if I do it right, probably going to take another hour. So we're going to call this part one of this interview. And when we continue, which I assume is next week, I don't know what next week means right now because we're currently October 10th. And I don't never know when these are going to come out. It could be next week. It could be 3 months from now. I'm not sure. We continue next week. Assume that you're going to hear a lot about the legal process, about the recovery and the medical stuff, because that stuff's very important to get to. So folks, do me a favor, come back next week and let's hear the rest of what John has to say. Thank you so much for tuning in.